Here we have a dialogue then between the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and Yitzchak, our father Yitzchak, right? Yitzchak says, Yuchan Esav, right? Let Esav find favor in Hashem. So Omalei, so Rebbeinu Shel Olam answers him, Rasha who? He's a Rasha. So Omalo, so what did Yitzchak say? He says, Balomat Tzedek, well, you know why? He has not yet learned to know righteousness. So, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you know, give him a chance, you know. Maybe he did learn something, all right? So, Amalei, so Rebbeinu Shel Olam answers him and he says, the Oros Nechoches Ye'avel. You know what he does? He takes the land where truth exists and he spoils it, right? So, Amalei, so he said to him, no, Im Kain, if that's the case, what is the rest of the pasuk? Yiragir Hashem. So he won't see the glory of God. Okay. So again, as we see, you know, that even though Yitzchak tries to excuse his son Esav, but nevertheless, Esav did not behave like a brother to Yaakov. Instead, he behaved as an enemy to Yaakov. Okay. So, Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, and again another pasuk. My desir, what is the meaning of the pasuk where it says, Al titein ad Hashem avaye rosha? Oh God, it says, do not give in to the desires of the wicked. Zimome al tofek, do not literally cause to spread his zimome. The question is, what is the meaning of zimome? I'll come back to that in a second, right? Yerum usela, may they be raised on high. Okay, so the question is, what does it mean, Zimumi al Tofik? Rashi quotes a word, Zimum, which we find in the Gemara. We find it, for example, in Gemara Shabbos or Ervin, where they speak about it's like a, I wouldn't say a hook, it's more like a ring that they put in the snout of an animal, so that what could they do? So they could take it, they could pull it, all right, and make it, you know, go. So if we take it in that particular sense, then it means then don't give a chance, you know, don't let go, so to speak, of his, or in other words, keep him always under control. That's one possibility. However, I think that maybe there's a better translation for this. We learned about Adam Zomimim. What does it mean? He schemed, you know, in order to carry out evil against the elements. So Zimomi al Tofik, I think, means simply, I mean, don't let him get away with his evil desires in order to do harm. So, listen, my opinion is probably a better. But listen, I can't call over Rashi. Rashi knows his Hebrew too. In fact, he knew it better than I. Over Yaakov. Anyway, Yaakov says, this is the continuation of the Trash. It says, Yaakov said, Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, Rebbeinu Shel Olam. He says, Al titein li'esav ha'rosha ta'avas libay. He says, don't let Esav, the wicked, have the desires of his heart. In other words, you know, and Zimumi al Tofik, and at the same time, do not let go of his Zimum. In other words, keep him always under control, or don't let him, as I say, my second interpretation, don't let him carry out his plan in order to harm the people of Israel. All right, we'll stop at this point. The word zoo already belongs with the next one. So we'll stop tonight. Alright, tonight is the 1st of August in the year 2001, right? Okay. And we are now beginning Megillah, Davov, Omen Base, the second side. Okay. Now, I said that the word zoo, the last word on the previous page, really goes with the following page, which is what we all have over there. Okay. Remember that Yaakov, right, he said to Rebbeinu Shel Olam, he says, Al titen, you know, the pasuk remembers, Al titen al Hashem avaye Rasha, right? Do not give unto the Rasha what he hopes for. In other words, don't let him have what he wants, okay? And we said this refers to Esav, okay, the God's fight. Now remember, Esav, what's the other name for Esav?
Edom,
right. Esav is Edom. And what did we say about Edom? We said that this really represents Rome, okay? And of course, in a later time, it meant actually the Christian world, okay? Since this past week, you know, we observed Tisha B'Av, right? And one of the most famous kinos of Tisha B'Av happens to be Tzivan Halos Tishali Nishleim Asirayach, written by Yehuda HaLevi. So Yehuda HaLevi, who loved Eretz Yisrael even while he was living in Spain, he wrote a short poem in which he said, Libi b'Mizrach, my heart is in the east, right? Yonoichi b'Sof Ma'arav, and I am at the very end of the west. Now, of course, what does it mean? So we have to understand, first of all, if we picture the Mediterranean, picture a map of the Mediterranean region in front of you, okay? So what do we find? We find that where is Eretz Yisrael? That's the Mizrach. That's on the eastern end of the Mediterranean. Where is Spain in which he was living? That's in the west. Okay, so we understand that first line of the verse. Then he says, then he says, as he goes on in the poem, he says that, okay, Ech Rav Levi Nitam and so on, Chol Mishosu and so on. In other words, how can I even delight and enjoy eating and drinking while I am, he says, the Hevel, I'm trying to remember the exact word, I haven't looked at it in a long time. But at any rate, he says, I am, you know, in bondage to Yishmael, right? And Israel, and there is Israel, is Bechevel Edom, is in bondage to right. Because historically, he was living in that part of Spain, which had still at that time was dominated
by the Moors.
The Arabs and so on and so forth. So that would be the reference over there. All right. Who was in Eretz Israel at the time of Yehuda Levi? What does it mean, Edom? The answer is, this was the time of the Crusades. And for a while, for fairly close to 100 years, the Crusaders had conquered Eretz Israel. And so therefore, Edom in this case is what? It's the Christians who are over there. Do you understand? So Edom first was identified with Rome, Imperial Rome, and subsequently became identified with the Christian world in general. Okay. So, all right, so...
He really
yes.
Made a trip.
He started on a trip. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So
he had it.
He speaks about living between two lions.
Yes, he speaks about a lot of things. He speaks about how on board the ship storms came up and everything else, and everybody thought, that the ship was going to founder, sink and so on. And then Rabbi Shalom brought quiet, and everything came calm and peaceful. And so finally he reached Mitzrayim. He finally reached Egypt, and then of course eventually from Egypt he went to Eretz Israel. All right. At any rate. So Yaakov Avinu says, please, Rabbeinu Shalom, don't give in to Esav the wicked. And then he says, what is the Bomei Al Tofek, right? What is Bomei Al Tofek? So remember, you heard my two interpretations. One based upon Rashi, who says Bomei Al Tofek means that you should not lose control of him, right? By virtue of the nose ring that he has in his snout in order to make him, to pull him or restrain him, whatever it may be, right? Or, as I preferred in my interpretation, and Zimbabwe Me'al Tovik means Protestant portion, don't give in, to his wicked desires. What is he scheming, okay? But how is the Gemara now interpreting? So here's a very interesting argument that we have. It says, Zub, this refers to... And now we start on the top of the next page, the one that you have in front of you. It says, Zu Germania shel Edom. This is Germania of Edom. Now, of course, Rashi says, Germania says, Shem Malchus v'him Edom. He says, this is the name of the kingdom. And they are part, you know, of the Christian world, okay? Gemar Mishel. Needless to say, right, it makes much more sense to say Gemar Mishel means really it should be Zu Germania Shel Edom, okay? So now the question is, all right, what is Germania Shel Edom? So the answer is, over here, he's not talking about when Germany became a Christian nation, Loyolenu, but he's talking about the ancient Germans, you know, the Germanic tribes who fought against the Roman legions, okay? The Roman Empire. There was continual war between them. Those of us who survived second year Latin will remember that we read over there about Julius Caesar, right? We read his commentaries about the war that he had with various nations, first with the Gauls and then against the Germans, okay? Afterwards, he fought against the Britain, by the way. He fought against the British also, okay? Ach, everybody, that's all everybody. I can say.
All
right. So, at any rate, so what is this Gemara Shalom? So the Gemara continues with an Agada. It says, Shilomolei hein yotzin machrim kol hoylam kulay. It says, if it were up to the Germanic tribes, they could have destroyed the entire world. Because go know that the time would come almost 1900 years later, right, than the time that this was written, that unfortunately this was exactly what was in the mind of the German dictator, okay? That he was ready to be Machrivus Kol Ha'olam, right, to destroy the entire world. All right. But getting back to our text, we have to understand that it says that if it weren't for what? If it weren't for the fact that the Beinu Shel Olam held him back, you know, it's a Momo El Topic, then in that particular case these Germanic tribes would have conquered the entire world. Okay. Of course, what happened eventually to the Roman Empire? It fell. Right. And it fell to various tribes, you know, that came and conquered them, besides the Huns, who came from someplace in Asia Minor and wound up in Hungary, and then they, you know, they attacked. You heard about Attila the Hun, you know. But at the same time, you also had Germanic tribes that kept on also making war against Rome. And they were good fighters, you know. There's no question about that. So, therefore, it's the Rabbeinu Shel Olam who holds them back from destroying the world. The Yomer Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina, and he embroiders this particular description, if you wish, about the Germanic tribes by saying as follows. It says, plus mayor katire taga ikabigamamia shalit. He says, you know, there are 300 people who are crowned with a crown, in other words, little kings, okay, in Gamami of Edom, right? And at the same time, but Las Meya Vishisin Vachamisha, and there are 365 Marzavne Ika Biromi, who are Marzavne. So how, what is Marzavne? So Marzavne, according to Rashi, says they are Duksim. So I'll tell you, what is Duks? Let me remind you of Duks. The Dukes. Now, how do you think the word Dukes came into the English language? Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Dukes in Latin means a leader, literally. Okay. Right. And, you know, Dukes, right? The D-U-X, right? You may have seen that. Right. So it means a leader in Latin. So that there are then 365 leaders. In other words, of course, for Rashi, he realized that there was an emperor in Rome. But it means, you know, that if you take, you know, all the other highest officials in the land, they are that, okay? So there are 365 of them in Rome. Uvechoy yoyma, and every single day, nap kehane leyapehane. These go and they challenge the others. They go and fight with the others, right? Umiktol chad binayu, and they kill one of them. And because every day a new king is being killed in battle, so as a result they don't have success in what? In having one grand king over the German tribes. Okay. In other words, the German tribes are always fighting with each other. And so this is the glick, you know, that they don't unite. Machlokes. In this case, it's not a machlokes for shape shemaim. It's the other way around. Okay. Right. Correct. I mean, Germany was divided into this, you know, Saxony and Württemberg and Bavaria and Prussia, etc., etc. I can't go through all of them, you know. Hesse, you know, Hesse, the Hessians, remember, came to fight it against the Patriots in America. So they had all those. So this was the glick that they were divided amongst each other. Okay. The other Rav Yitzchak. And Rav Yitzchak says as follows. Here we have a very, very famous passage. He says, Im yoyma lecho odom, if a person should say to you, Yogati, I've worked hard, but I haven't been able to carry out anything, literally, I haven't been able to find success, in other words, in spite of my hard work, right? So, Tommy, well, excuse me, I skipped a couple of lines. No. You've got to, right. I worked hard, he says, Al-Tamim, don't believe him. Not if a person says, now what if a person should say, Lo Yogati, Yulotzasi, I didn't even have to work hard and still I was successful. He says, Al-Tamim, don't believe him. But if a person says, Yogati, Yulotzasi, I worked hard and as a result I was able to attain success, Tamim, that you should believe. But now he qualifies it. He says, you know when this is true? He says, Hane miole bidive Torah. Yeah, these words that we've just said, or these things, this applies to the study of Torah. Study of Torah, you have to work hard, but if you work hard, you will succeed in understanding it much better. Okay? Avol b'matza matan. But, you know, you can't apply the same thing to business dealing. Because when it comes to business dealings, siyatu min shemaya, okay? To be successful, you have to have a little, you have to have a rebbeinu shleilam to give you a little help in order to do it. In other words, it's possible, you know, that people do not work hard and they succeed in business. And of course, on the contrary, it's also possible that people, you know, work hard and yet they never make it. So the business world is not the Torah world, okay? But in the Torah world, this is through Yagati Umotzasi. But he says, even so, I give him further qualification. He says, well, the Divrei Torah, even when it comes to learning Torah, Lo Am Moron, we are saying this, Elo, only in reference what? The Chadude. Now, Chadude means literally sharpening. In other words, sharpening the mind. Work hard, sharpen your mind in studying Torah, you understand better the Torah. Okay. Avol kumen girso, but what when it comes to being able to remember everything that you've learned, that already says the siyata mishamaya. This, you have to have help from the Beit HaShemayim. This is one of the unfortunate things, you know. You learn and you learn, you learn, you know. Not everybody is around Scheinberg, right? Not everybody is a Reb Moshe Feinstein. Not everybody is even a Lubavitcher Rebbe. Believe me, I mean, he was also a great Talmud Chochem, okay? Not everybody is a Rav Soloveitchik. That's a certain quality of the Beit HaShemayim that has blessed these people, where they put in hours of study every single day, but they have a phenomenal memory in order to remember all these things. Right, this is long before computers were invented where you can put things on a disk and so on. I've yet to learn how to do that, but
KFOs, the five people, one who knows, doesn't let any, knows everything, remembers everything. And doesn't.
Well, it doesn't exactly say that Pirkei Avos, but what it says is that you have four different types of students. You have the sponge,
right?
You have the funnel,
right.
You have the sieve, and then you have, you know, the strainer, okay, where each one has a different qualification, right? the funnel, everything goes in, but at the same time, everything goes out again. Okay, right. And the sponge, you absorb everything, but you cannot tell the difference between what's important and what's not important, and so on. And then the others, you know, one of them can sift, and unfortunately, it keeps the coarse stuff and lets the fine thing out, and the other one is able, you know, to keep the fine stuff and then let out the coarse stuff. So this is what it is. But there's another Maimer Chazal that we have also in Pirkei Avos. It says over there, you know, that you know, you should not, you know, a person forgets, you know, something that he has already learned. So, you know, this is a serious thing, because it means that you don't remember what you've had, all right? So, he quotes as a pasuk that we'll be reading this Shabbos in the Torah, right? It says, Rak yishom elechosh, bon afshecho meyod, that you should be careful and guard yourself. Do not forget the things that your eyes saw. You know, of course, referring to you know, Mount Sinai and the splitting of the Red Sea, etc., etc. Okay, don't forget these things. So, Boris says, it says over there. When do we say that he's like almost guilty, as if he's he deserves death? It's a very strong statement. I don't take it literally, but what it means is, if a person deliberately, in other words, he removes them, he doesn't want to even think about them anymore, he's not interested in learning. But if a person, you know, has learned so much that he forgets a little, okay, you can't help it. Okay, so at any rate, getting back over here to our text then, so what do we see? We see that some people, when it comes to studying Torah, there's no question that they say, yes, you have to be yogati matzasi, you have to work hard, you have to succeed. But at the same time, not everybody is so gifted that he can remember everything that he's done, and that, this is a gift from the Veda Shalei, the Yata Vishmaya. Okay? All right. The Yomar Rabbi Yitzhak, and there's another statement now by Rabbi Yitzhak. He says it's wrong. He says, Imro Yisrael Rosho Shasha Mesachek Esloi, if you see a wicked person who literally the hour is playing for him. In other words, a person goes to Vegas, the Aleinu, okay? Right? Takes the slot machine. I guess he'd go to Connecticut, it's much closer. You play the slot machine, right? And everything, whatever you bet, I mean, it goes, okay? So he says, if you see a person who is so successful, whatever he's doing in this particular case, you know, we're not talking about, you know, successful in Torah things. We're talking about
good fortune.
Yeah, he has good fortune, whatever he has, okay? So he says, how does Goribo? Don't get into a fight with him, okay? Shinemar, as we have a pasuk, is in Tehillim. It says, Altischa b'mereyim, which means, don't compete against the mereyim, against the evildoers, okay? Below, and he says, not only that, Elishat rochem atzlichim, this guy is so lucky that whatever he does, he's successful in it. Shinemar, and again, they quote another pasuk from another one of the Mizmori Tehillim. It says, Yochilu derocho bechol eis. Why? Because literally his ways are successful at all times. In other words, whatever he's doing, he's lucky, he's successful. But not only that, you know, he goes into a trial in court, and you know what? He wins the trial.
Even though he's a Russian.
Right. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Moron Mishpatechem Negdom, which means your judgments are very far from him. In other words, the Rebbeinu Shalom, you know, lets him get away with it. Okay. Velo'od, and not only that, Elish HaRebetzainot, not only that, but that guy is lucky to see the downfall of his enemies. So he's really, you know, very, very successful. And what does Avraham Avinu say? He says, Al Tischa, don't get involved with a person like that, because you'll only you wind up, you know, I don't have to tell you, disappointed, right? You won't be
successful.
And so, right. And how do we know? Whatever it may be.
Don't bet against him.
Right. You're right. Don't bet against him. All right. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, called Seder of Yafiyah. You know what he can do? He can blow away his enemies. Okay? So, this is pretty bad, right? So don't get involved with it. Ain't he? Isn't this so? Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Mishem Rabbi Shimon Yochai. But didn't Rabbi Yochanan say in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Mutal is goes for Shoyim Boilam Hazeb, that it is permitted to, you know, to go against the wicked in this world? Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, and again here he quotes a Pasuk from Mishlei, from the book of Proverbs, says, Oizvei Teru Yahalalu Rasha, he says, those who desert the Torah, they praise the wicked. Those who keep the Torah, they will contend with them. They will fight with them. Okay? So, Betanya, and now we have another teaching. What is it? It says, those Taibam also Noimer, he says, Mutar is Goris Borshoim Elam Hazeh. Okay? You are permitted to fight against the evildoers in this world. Okay. Im lechashcha adam loymar al tischa b'mreim, and if somebody should whisper to you, literally, in other words, should try to entice you to say, don't contend with the wicked, with the wicked people. Says the alter kani b'yisrael, nor should you, you know, should you be jealous of those who do. Who do avla? We use it in Moshul in Yiddish. Yeah, do evil things, right? Right. You know, you say it's an avla, right? A tut an avla. So, okay. So don't get involved with him. So, says, you know, who's that? This is Misha Liga Neufay, Omer Kay. If a person is afraid to get involved, so then he says, Altis Chabim Reim, right? In other words, don't contend with them. So far so good. Alright, so what do we see? There are times when you have to use your judgment, but as we see, there is also a difference of opinion as to whether we're permitted to get involved in fighting the wicked or not. So now along comes a somewhat different interpretation of the pasuk. Okay. So he says, Elo, but rather he says, Altischa b'mreim. When it says, do not literally contend with the wicked, you know what it means? It means, liyos kamreim. Now, here he's taking a different meaning of the word altischar. So I told you, in the English translation of Tehillim, altischar b'mreim means, literally, you know, don't contend with them. Well, it's like altischabom or something like that, altischorabom, you know. But we have a different use of the same root in Sefer Yirmiyahu, where he says, don't contend with them, which is one meaning. But then we have a different idea, and that is in modern Hebrew. How do we use the word tachrut or mitchareh and so on and so forth? How do we use it? Says it means somebody who is a competitor. Competitor. Okay? Don't compete with them. So this is now another interpretation that he gives. In other words, it's not just don't get involved in fighting them, but don't even try to compete with them in what respect?
May I ask a question?
Sure.
They're not saying don't get involved in fighting evil as such.
We have other pesukim, as we saw already, he said, right, that they do. We do.
Right.
We do have to fight against evil, too. Right.
Right. This is not saying that.
Right. Right.
This is
got
another connotation.
It's another connotation, correct. Okay. Now, how does he interpret it over here? He says, in other words, do not compete with the evildoers so that you become like an evildoer. Don't do that. Okay? don't learn, in other words, from their wickedness, that they say, look, they're so lucky, I'll do exactly the same thing, you understand? V'yal tekane v'isri avlo, nor should you be jealous of those who do wickedness, v'yos k'isri avlo, means don't be like those who do it, okay? V'yomer, and there's another pasuk which says, al yikane lipre b'chatoyim, right? In other words, don't let your heart be jealous of those who are evildoers. In other words, it's a similar idea, only in another pasuk. In other words, don't envy those who prosper in their wickedness, so that you decide that you're going to be wicked like them. That's not the way, right? So you'll be prosperous, right? You have to maintain, in other words, your ethical standards. That you have to do. So there is to it.
Okay. That's a very important
thought
for today.
Isn't it?
I just what I'm thinking as I'm listening to this. The application to current times. Right. That kind of interpretation. Yeah.
You see everybody thriving.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody can be a billionaire, you know.
I forgot you have to go on the show, no? But you read about these schemes. I mean, people, they invent fraudulent schemes, and they get millions, where they promise you that they're going to give you millions.
Right.
And
intelligent people and professional people get sucked in.
We had a case over here in this community years ago, I remember, with some of the most prominent active Jewish people in the community were taken in by such a character, if you recall. Okay. Alright. So he says, look, alright, it's loikasha. In other words, here they tell you in one case, don't compete with them, don't be jealous of them. In the other case it says, you know, you should.
One says you shouldn't tell you to do it, and the other says you can't.
Right, okay. So, that being the case, we have to try to qualify again what we said over here. It says, Korban Milei Didei, says, Loikasha, it's not a difficulty. It says, Korban Milei Didei, Shmaya. It says, if it isn't personal business, then in that particular case, don't try to compete with an evil person. But, if it is for the sake of heaven, I mean, you're doing things, you know, to preserve Yiddishkeit, to preserve this, then in that case, then you have to go to work, and you have to contend with them and fight for what is right. Speak up. Right. Okay. If you wish, I could even say that in both cases we are referring to his own personal business. But Bimilagaday means not, you know, heavenly things, but you know, your own day-to-day affairs, where it says, you know, don't, in the one case, don't contend with them, and then the other one says, you know, you do have to, right? So, he says, how do you apply that? He says, well, a kasher, it's not a kasher. He says, or b'tzadik gomor, or b'tzadik sheinu gomor. If a person is absolutely righteous, then in that particular case, he will be able to stick up for his ideals and fight against the evildoers, all right? But what if a person is not 100% righteous? Then in that case, he doesn't have such a good case, you know, in fighting against the evildoer's wife. Obviously, because the evildoer can say, and who are you to challenge me, right? When you have this and this in your own past history or something like that. Okay. Domer Adhunov. As Ravuna said, in interpreting a pasuk, it's a pasuk in the Sefer Chavakuk. Says, "My, this is what is the meaning of the pasuk over there?" The Chavakuk says, "Loma tabit bogdim tachrish bevala rosh tzadik b'menu." Why do you look on upon people, you know, who literally betray others? Bogdim, right? But of course, you know, it also means, you know, there are people who commit evil. After all, what do we do when we say, or Shamnu, right? We We have trespassed, and then what's the next word? Bogadnu, right? Okay, so in other words, bogadnu is also, it's a form of evil doing, okay? So the Navi says, why, Rabbeinu Shalom, do you look on at the, you know, the people who betray others, tachrish, and you are silent, v'ala rosh atzadik b'menu, when the Russia swallows, literally, someone who is more righteous than him. So he says, you know what the pasuk indicates? He says, the pasuk indicates as follows. He says, tzadik mimenu goyleya. If a person is only more righteous than him, then the wicked are able to swallow him up. But tzadik gomur inu goyleya. But if a person is absolutely righteous, then the wicked one cannot swallow him up. In other words, he will not cause that person to change in any way from living up in accordance with the standards. Okay? And then he says, boy, Simon, if you wish, I have a different interpretation. He says, Shalom is hachek is loy, shani. When the wicked is, everything is going his way, okay, but what happens when the wicked begins to stumble? Something he meets with reverse? Then in that case, okay, in that case, then you can certainly fight with him because, you know, he's in a much weaker condition. Okay. Now, so this is what I said, you know, we are dealing over here, actually, with Agarata, but very soon we'll be finishing and come back again to Halacha. Okay. However, since we got to talking, you know, about Rome, okay, so now we have a new Agarata about this. Okay? Omar Ula. Ula said as follows. I have to explain to you. Ula was a great sage, but where did he live? He lived in Babylonia. So what he has to say over here is not 100% accurate from the point of view of geography, but nevertheless, I'll explain what Ula had in mind. Okay. All right. He says as follows. Italia shel Yovan, which literally, if I would translate that to you, would mean the Italy of Greece. Now, Vicomtes, how does it happen? So, I mean, how could Italy be Greece? You understand? So, the answer is, we have to bear in mind, okay, Danny, it's good to see you. We have to bear in mind, picture, here is Greece sticking out over here, right, the Mediterranean, right? And here you have Italy over here, also sticking out. Now, if this is Greece and this is Italy, okay, and the Greeks decide that they don't have enough room in order to live in Greece itself, so naturally, what are the Greeks going to do? And this is what happened historically. They got in their ships and decided to colonize this part of Italy, okay? So that southern Italy was actually Greek. They spoke
lower,
Greek.
The lower
food. The lower part, right. And that would include also, incidentally, the island of Sicily,
yeah.
Right. Okay, that also. It was Greek speaking. Eventually, of course, what happened is that Rome itself, which, of course, remember, was Latin. Of course, first they had to conquer their own neighbors over there, okay? Then they expanded. And they fought wars, and eventually they conquered this part of Italy, which was Greek-speaking and which reflected Greek culture and everything else. And so then they incorporated it into Rome. So that subsequently, of course, you have a mixture, really, of Latin and Greek influence in Italy itself. I have to tell you, for example, years ago, I studied Cicero's letters, okay? It's a course of Latin. I think Mill took it also at a later period in City College, okay? Cicero's letters, Cicero writes letters, you know, to various friends and so on and so forth. Now, when he wants to use a fancy word, what do you think he uses?
Greek.
He uses Greek. It's like many people who talked English or other languages, and when it came, you know, when they're looking for a fancy word, they chose a French word, right? French word, French expression, or something like that.
Yes,
so, right, so in other words, 2,000 years ago, Greek was the fancy language that the aristocrats in Rome knew. Now, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, at that particular point, you'll see that the Greek language is praised highly in the Talmud. It's praised highly. And of course, what was the first translation? It was into Greek, if you remember. Translation, you know, what we call the Septuagint, okay? Targum HaShivim, okay? So, you know, they used it. And of course, I mean, don't forget, for several centuries, under Alexander, if you remember, he conquered the Persian Empire, correct? And then what happened? So, Alexander died as a young man in battle. So he had generals. One of his generals was a guy by the name of Ptolemy, and another one was the name Seleucus. So what happened? So Ptolemy took Greece, Egypt, right, and he became the king of Egypt, okay? And Seleucus conquered Syria. He said, okay, this is my territory. And then Jews in Eretz Yisrael were torn to a certain extent between, first they were part of Ptolemaic Greece, and then they were part of Syrian Greece. And of course we know what took place in Eretz Yisrael prior to the Hashmonaim.
Well, the Syrians, the Syrians that destroyed the temple?
Didn't destroy the temple, no. What happened was that Syria conquered Eretz Yisrael from the Greeks who, in other words, from the Ptolemies in Egypt, okay? They conquered it, and then they wanted to impose their way of life upon the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. This brought about, of course, the struggle that, you know, we still celebrate to this day in Hanukkah. But there were a large group of people in Eretz Yisrael who were taking up Greek ways. We call them the Hellenists.
So, right.
You know, I thought, what is Hellas? Hellas is the Greek word for Greeks and so on. So they were Hellenists. Okay? And even though we find, you know, that the Hashmonaim were able to defeat the Syrian Greeks, right, and establish a dynasty in Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless, Greek influence still continue very strong. So we see that the Greek influence is strong not only in Eretz Yisrael, but Greek influence still continued to be strong even in Italy itself. So getting back,
is
yes.
Is that where the architecture?
Yeah, of course. Architecture, yeah. Statues, you know, and stuff like that you see. Yeah, definitely. All right.
How did the letters of Sisera came through this time?
They were kept in manuscripts. There are libraries in the ancient world. No, one of the most famous libraries happened to be in Alexandria. Unfortunately, it was burned. Right. Yeah.
The Romans take over the Greek gods.
They didn't have to. They had the same one. So they say, okay, you call him Zeus, we'll call him Jupiter. Okay. This is what they did. Okay. All right. So now, as it say about Italia Shal Yovan, he says, Zek Rach Godol Shal Romi. You know what is Italia Shal? This means this is the great city of Rome. Okay. Now, you know what happened in Rome? He says, Vahavya Tlos Meir Pasa, Tlos Meir Pasa. Rome was so big that it was 300 parasangs by 300 parasangs. I mean, I don't have to tell you. It would mean that the city of Rome extended something like... 3,000 miles by 3,000 miles or something. That's a little exaggeration. Okay, we understand that. But he wants to point out how great was the metropolis of Rome. Okay? The Yeshbo Shesash Rokim, and there are in it 365 markets, Kiminyan Yemei Sachamon, just corresponding, you know, to the days of the solar year. Okay? The Kotin Shebechulon, and the smallest of all of these markets, Shel Mokri Oifes. That was the market of those who sold you know, chickens, fowl, you name it. So, okay. The Havia Shishosabil. And even this small market, he says, was 16 miles by 16 miles. Okay. Umelech, and you know what? And the king of Rome, in other words, the emperor, you know what? He says, Soyed Bechon Yom Yechon Mehem. Every day in the year he goes and he has dinner in one of these markets. I guess one day he likes fish, another day he likes chicken, another day he likes steak, and I say gators, you know. He tries the Chinese one day, he tries...
Right,
no.